atomic, gigantification was a sweeping Japan nation when along came a dude with an ultra attitude, a common rider who's the greatest kicker of Japan and of all man. Last you short now, baby. To not talk big now, baby.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Kaiju Conversation. I'm your host, Elisha. And joining me, as always, my lovely co-host and editor.
Hello, I am Rex.
And I am dying right now.
I've noticed. The audience hasn't, but I most certainly have in the past few minutes, you could say.
Yeah, I know. So I apologize ahead for anybody who is hearing me and they're like, why does he sound like he's croaking?
Why does he sound like deaf?
Yeah, do I sound like deaf?
A tiny bit.
Did the chicken noodle soup do anything?
I don't remember what you sounded like before that, I'm going to be honest.
Oh, okay. Well, yes, I apologize. I think I have a minor strand of the flu that has resulted in my throat, like, closing up on me tonight. And so I'm trying to do this on a bowl of chicken noodle soup. With no caffeine. I did open up one of my caffeinated drinks, and I did take a sip. Very specifically, a sip. And I'm hoping that that's enough caffeine to keep me going. I should have just injected it in my veins, honestly.
Hell like, yeah.
That probably would have been a better choice.
Mm.
But besides my woes of being ill, Rex, how have you been?
Doing pretty good for the most part. I've actually started getting a little sick today myself, but very clearly not anywhere near to the extent of yours.
Whoa. Okay, so you say that, but honestly, this is the most mild sickness I've had in the last 12 months.
Yeah, like, but you also had a very, 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 very bad one recently, so, you know, your standards kind of shot up.
Yeah, I know, because I was literally dead in bed for 5 days. Like, I couldn't call, I couldn't text, I couldn't look at the screen, I couldn't listen to music. I laid in bed and said, oh my god, my head hurts.
Yeah, you were just dead. Just
I had 105 fever. Right?
I don't know what that is. I don't do Fahrenheit.
It was, I don't know. Google it.
No.
So, needless to say, this is pretty all right. It's just sinus and throat problems. I hate it when those happen. I really do.
Yeah, likewise. But
I'm going to exhaust my voice as much as I possibly can. And push as much air and angle my throat just at the right angle so that I sound the most okay to do this podcast episode. And so help me God.
What happens if you just croak mid-episode?
Yeah, I've been thinking about that. Like, what happens if, like, we say something and I'm like, and then I just start talking like Kayako from Ju-on The Grudge.
I was more just thinking, like, you just croak. Like, you're Ribbit. Talking. No. Ribbit. You're talking in a mid-sentence.
Oh.
Just nothing. Nothing left.
I don't know.
And then I have to call an ambulance somehow. International ambulance call.
Yes, that is what you do.
Is that a thing? How do I do that?
I don't know. I should have given you some options to contact people in case I croak mid-podcast recording. I feel like that's not a question that you would normally have as a podcaster.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you might be onto something there, I think. But then again, most people usually don't get calls from their best friend being like, hey, so there's a chance I might drive off a cliff in the middle of this call.
So
how are you doing?
There's a slim chance that maybe the way that we podcast is not healthy for me.
Really?
So perhaps we should change that a little bit.
Probably.
So how about we start putting your life at risk?
Oh, what, are you gonna make me jump off a cliff for this podcast? Is that what you're suggesting?
What?
What, you said need to start putting my life at risk?
I haven't even, what? Where did that come from?
You said you were gonna start putting my life at risk for the podcast.
I was talking about the sleep.
Potato, potato.
Oh my god. Where did that come from? I haven't even mentioned the cliff. I'm over here talking about how, like, I get so little sleep. And you're over here like, jump off a cliff. How are those two things remotely the same?
Well, both do come with a mild risk of death.
I think one has a higher risk than the other.
Okay, and? That doesn't change my statement.
I give up. Rex, how have you been?
I've been pretty good. I feel like you already asked me that, and I already kind of answered it.
Did I?
I think.
I feel like I went off on my woes about how I was dying.
Yeah, something like that.
So what have you been up to? There, let's answer that question. Because I did totally ask you the first question the first time. But what have you been up to?
I think before the last... Yeah, I think this was after the most recent recording we did. I went to Melbourne. That was fun. I got to see Dune Part 2 on the IMAX theater. I got to go to the zoo and meet an orangutan. So I met the real Scar King. What else did I do in Melbourne? I'm trying to remember that.
Didn't you go to a movie store?
Oh, yeah, I did. I actually have the movies literally right in front of me on my desk. I bought
What movies do you have in front of you?
I have the Female Prisoner Scorpion Complete Collection. Complete. It's only the Meiko Kaji movies. And then I have the Hiroyuki Sanada film, The Twilight Samurai.
Doesn't that have Tom Cruise in it?
No, that's The Last Samurai.
Oh, gotcha.
Same year.
Same year, has the same third word, and I think Sonata's in both.
Yes. I mean, he's only a supporting character in Last Samurai.
Well, yeah, that's because it's Tom Cruise.
I mean, Ken Watanabe is also a main character in that movie, so, yeah. This one's apparently, I hear it's apparently Sonata's best role. And it won a ton of Japanese Academy Awards, like 12. So it's tied with the first Always Sunset movie for most amount of awards, I believe.
So you're talking about The Twilight Samurai, right?
Yes, yes.
Gotcha.
And then also on my desk is not a film that I bought recently, but it's a film that might cause you to... it actually might cause you to croak if I even dare say its name. Do you have any guesses?
I feel like it might have something to do with a certain hype train, an air quotes hype train.
It just might be.
So let me get this straight. Are you talking about what kaiju and tokusatsu movies you've watched this week?
Well, I wasn't specifically talking about that, but it just happened to transition to this topic.
I see. So what have you watched?
Well, outside of this movie, I've been caught up on Garo. Only two episodes left of the new show. Or actually, no, one episode left. And if I'm being honest, it's kind of been mid, which is sad, but yeah, it is what it is. I rewatched Dune and Dune Part 2, and Dune Part 2 is absolutely incredible on IMAX, I must say. Oh yeah, first IMAX experience. Very awesome. Very awesome. Would recommend.
You haven't been to an IMAX before?
No, they don't exactly have any in my region. They used to, but it shut down because no one was going to the IMAX theater. So they just got rid of it.
Oh, that's a little depressing.
Yeah. But yeah, on my way to Melbourne, I ended up watching a certain movie on the plane, 2019's Godzilla King of the Monsters.
Because oh, that I know was that one.
Because in all honesty, it was probably, it might have been the only decent movie on the plane, on the options for the plane movies, given the, like, the only other movies were stuff like The Meg, The Flash, The Nun 2.
I'm seeing a common theme here.
Yeah. Warner Brothers Garbage.
It all starts with the.
Oh, I was thinking Warner Brothers.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah. But speaking of Warner Brothers Garbage, Godzilla King of the Monsters, I actually still like it, believe it or not. I still like it. But there are some very, yeah, moments. The whole nuclear element and the military involvement in that film is very, very weird and gets weirder on each rewatch. And then, yeah, the fights weren't as good as I remembered. And yeah, I don't know. I'll have more in-depth thoughts on the day we finally cover King of the Monsters together.
Whenever that may be.
Yeah, that won't be for a while, but it'll be a fun episode. It'll certainly be an episode.
Yeah, that'll be like 20, 30.
God. And then the movie on my desk currently, right in front of me, is Godzilla vs. Kong, which I rewatched in preparation for GXK since I decided I was going to rewatch all of the MonsterVerse movies and Monarch before this new film came out. And I think in some regards, I finally made peace with the movie, at least with its fights. I've made peace with the fact that most of the fights in the movie actually aren't that bad, except for the end of the Hong Kong fight. I still don't like that one at all. And like, I was mostly kind of enjoying the movie, like, up until the end. But then, like, after the movie ended, I don't know what it is, but I swear, every time I watch GVK, ever since the first watch, it's like, the movie will just be over, and then I'll slowly be like, I'll just slowly feel really fucking depressed. I'll just slowly feel really depressed after the movie's over. Like, I don't know what it is. I just feel sad after watching GVK. It's the only movie that, like, does this to me. Where it's just like, it's a pure popcorn flick, but when it's over, I just feel sad. I don't know if it's me just being, just like, thinking of what could have been, or what exactly it is, but there's just something about
what
this
happened.
Movie. Maybe. I don't know. There's just something about this movie that just makes me feel really sad. Oh, and the Team Godzilla cast, they suck. I hate their scenes. Unless Walter Simmons is there. He's very funny. Every line he says is the funniest part of the
and
entire
movie. And now, my mecca.
That's not even his funniest lines.
Apex Tatton.
No, he hams up the movie. He's actually, Damien Bichir is actually so good in the role. And it's even better when you consider how terrible most of his dialogue is. Like, he is like the best worst character in the movie. Like, he's so poorly written. The dialogue is dreadful, but he just makes it work. Damien Bichir is a legend.
He's kind of Tonus. He's kind of Tony Starking it a little bit.
Maybe. I don't know.
It just kind of feels like he's there. You know, he's like, I got a paycheck and I'm here to enjoy myself.
Yeah. Which I can respect that. I can respect that. But yeah, that movie, I think I like it slightly more than I used to. Keyword being slightly.
Huh.
And that's about it off the top of my head. What about you? Have you watched anything?
Why do you have to ask it like that?
Why shouldn't I?
Well, maybe I did watch some tokusatsu.
Oh, then please, enlighten us.
Oh.
Go right ahead. Come on.
I didn't really watch any tokusatsu, per se.
What the hell? What the hell, man?
I did watch a couple J-horror films.
Oh, okay, that makes up for it. That makes up for it, I think.
I watched Liver Leaf from 2018, and ooh. I watched Blind Woman's Curse.
Ooh, I haven't seen that one, but I'm as could be guessed from the fact that I bought all the female prisoner scorpion movies. I quite like Mako Kaji movies.
I'll be honest. I thought Blind Woman's Curse was kind of underwhelming. It was directed by Teru Ishii, who also did Horrors of Malformed Men, which is a really weird psychedelic horror movie from the 60s that Toei produced.
Mm-hmm.
And then he went over to Nikatsu and he did this movie. And there is a blind woman, but there's not really a curse. It's about Yakuza gangs fighting.
Mm-hmm.
And the lady is trying to enact revenge on the person that killed her husband. And that's about it. It's good, but it's kind of underwhelming.
Damn. Sounds like what would become pretty standard fare for Mako Kaji, though.
Now, speaking of Mako Kaji, I did watch Lady Snowblood as well.
Ooh.
Which, that was a lot of fun. I enjoyed that. And then if we're talking like Dune and whatnot, I did also go and see a Hollywood film. I went and I watched Poor Things.
Oh, nice. I haven't seen that yet.
I'll be honest, the only reason I watched it was because it won so many Oscars.
Yeah.
And it looked actually kind of cool. So I was like, I want to see what this is. And Poor Things is basically the modern day Frankenstein. And that's really cool.
I definitely heard some comparisons to, like, was it Bride of Frankenstein? Or no, it was Frankenhooker, I think I had the comparisons to, sorry.
That sounds probably more accurate. I just, like, from Frankenstein, in terms of, like, what I've watched, it really reminded me of Frankenstein. And I was like, this is really cool. Like, this is a really cool modernized interpretation of that concept.
Mm-hmm.
So, I enjoyed it a lot. But outside of that, I didn't really watch anything. It's been kind of a busy week for me.
Yeah.
Between my G-Fest short film and working on a... I guess I can talk about it now, because by the time this goes live, it'll basically be done. For Liver Leaf, I'm actually producing bonus features for SR Cinema for that release. So, that's why I got to watch it. So mm-hmm. I've been working on that, and then on top of all of that, I've been doing Kaiju Conversation Live, working in general, and working on the website that is now online for everybody to see.
Mm. Fun stuff, but so what movie are we covering today, out of curiosity?
Shoot.
Jesus, I get that you're sick, man, but come on, you're never prepared. What the heck? I think you really need to get your act together one of these days.
Look, it's just the thing that I always do, you know? I forget what we're talking about. And then miraculously, I actually have watched it.
Then be better.
No, I won't be. You know why?
Should ask the viewers if you should just be kicked from your own podcast.
No, it's because the viewers have come to expect that during every recording, I will miraculously forget what film we're covering, and then miraculously remember it the moment you say, oh yeah, there is one other tokusatsu film that I've watched.
Yeah,
this
and I'm
week.
And I'm sure they're just rolling their eyes every single time.
And I'm sure with this very meta commentary joke about it, they're also rolling their eyes.
Especially since I think this isn't the first time we've done this bit.
But I'm sick.
I don't care. Do better.
Neither do the viewers. Wait, they're not viewers. They're listeners.
Well, hey, some might be watching the image on the YouTube upload for some reason. Good on them. Whenever that comes out.
That's a purgatory kind of stuff right there. It's like, you...
Different people have different definitions of entertainment, you know, so...
You had premarital love, and that means that you must sit at a laptop or computer and watch every episode of Kaiju Conversation that's ever been produced with a still image for all eternity.
So, is this the CIA's latest torture method?
I feel like it's their torture method for me having to do this, because I feel like my throat's getting worse every time I say something.
Real.
So I feel like we should move on past the joke and talk about the movie that we're covering.
Well, are you going to finally remember it first, or...?
I don't remember it.
God. Well, I guess it makes sense. You know, the movie that I watched in preparation for this recording is one that doesn't really have much of any cultural relevance to you, but does have a tiny bit of cultural relevance to me.
What does that mean?
Well, I think you'll have a good guess when I reveal the title to you, so shut up and let me explain it to you.
Cut to the chase!
No, if you let me speak, then I can cut to the chase.
Then say it.
Shut up.
Say it.
Shut up. God.
I've had it with you.
Shut up.
Stop talking.
Stop.
No.
No, shut up.
You're the problem here. This is not on me. Look.
You sound like a Disney character.
Stop talking! I'm gonna reach through this laptop and punch the out of you.
Anyway, so today we're watching Executive Koala. Oh, sorry, not watching. Covering. I already watched that one. I'd hope that Mr. Elijah Thomas would have probably, hopefully, watched it as well in preparation. For the
You know, I just realized we are in the second week of Kawasaki Month 2.0,
That's right.
So that would make sense, of course.
That's right! Finally! He's learning!
So I did watch this movie earlier today.
Good. You should have. If you didn't, then I would make you croak.
Well, it's not going to be hard to do that, let me tell you.
That's true. A fly could probably kill you at this state.
I don't even know what to say to that. I think that hurt.
What? What do you mean?
Well, what I mean is, Executive Koala was released in Japan January 14th, 2006, but it did have its premiere at the Hawaiian International Film Festival, and then later was shown at the German Cine-Asian Film Festival in 2005.
Yes, October 10th, I believe, is the date of the Hawaiian premiere.
Yes, and this film is a part of what Minoru Kawasaki considers as his absurd animal series. It has... The Calamari Wrestler in it, of course, right? That was his first film. And then it has this film. And then it has Kawasaki's follow-up film, Goalkeeper Crab. And very recently, in 2022, it has another film that brought that series back with President Tanuki.
Yes. And as with Calamari Wrestler, which we previously covered in last year's Kawasaki Month, this film is quite bizarre.
Is
it?
To
put it lightly. I would say so.
I think I've just been desensitized.
See, I am too, but I can acknowledge that this film is quite unusual compared to what I typically watch.
Well, that's probably because you don't watch Minoru Kawasaki's often.
That's true. I've literally only watched them like because of the episodes we've done.
Then again, that means you've basically watched everything I've watched.
Yeah. Yeah, the only thing left to see for me is like Monster X Strikes Back and like one or two other films.
Yeah. So you're basically there.
You know,
I really could not find much on pre-production. I got like I watched a making of, but I didn't really have anything on pre-production. Okay, I'll just start there. So I didn't have really much of anything on pre-production of this film. Like I tried looking like through some of Kawasaki's interviews and like I watched like a 40-minute making of the film, which was pretty cool. It was cool to see the actual filming and like costume fitting of this film, but I really didn't find a lot on the pre-production of this film. Did you have anything in particular? Or?
So normally I have the luck of being able to locate like blog posts or something, right? Where I'm like, oh, here's this cool information, right?
Mm-hmm.
I was unable to locate anything for yeah. this film.
No, these Kawasaki films have been a bit of a struggle to like research. Like I'll find little bits and pieces, but this one's probably been by far the hardest one to find much of anything on.
Now, I do have a little bit, but it's mostly about the producer of the film.
Oh.
So this was the follow-up film for Kawasaki to The Calamari Wrestler, right? Now, you may not remember, but in the Calamari Wrestler episode, I talked about another film called Shrimp Boxer. It was a English, like a United Kingdom English film that yeah. was brought to Japan,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I vaguely remember it, yeah.
So this was the second film that Kawasaki and Shuntaro Kanoe, who was the producer, worked on. Kanoe-san worked for New Select, a distribution company that eventually opened up a subdivision called Albatross, which I believe that's the same company that would eventually work on Bravestorm, if I'm remembering correctly. And then whenever Albatross was founded, Kanoe-san moved from New Select to that company. And his time at Albatross was not a very long time. It was pretty much 1995 to about 2003.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in that time, he was able to bring Queen Kong to Japan in 2001, Creatures from the Abyss in 2000, Killer Condom in 1999, and eventually one of his last films he would work on was Shrimp Boxer in 2003. Now, after 2003, he would leave Albatross and he founded Phantom Films. And that's the production company that worked on The Calamari Wrestler. They would end up working on Funky Forest, The First Contact, Retribution, a Koichi Kurosawa film, Ryaru Onigoko, Tormented 3D, the Takashi Shimizu film, and Love Exposure.
Ooh. Oh, yeah, they are credited in Love Exposure, aren't they? Yeah.
Now, after a year, so Kanoe-san did not work on all of those films. He worked on The Calamari Wrestler in 2004, and then a year later, in 2005, he would leave the company and found Tornado Films.
Mm-hmm.
That's the company that would work on a lot of on a couple of Kawasaki's films for the rest of the 2000s. However, they mostly worked on distribution for foreign films in Japan. One of their first title was Bubba Ho-Top.
Bubba Ho-Teep? Is that the Bruce Campbell film?
That's the Bruce Campbell film. Which it's called Elvis versus the Mummy Man in Japan.
Oh. I've never seen the film, but I really want to, purely for Bruce Campbell as Elvis.
It looked crazy. And then he would
work. I hear it is.
They would then release Spy Monkey and then Atomic Circus, also known as The Return of James Battle, Lizard Woman, a Thai film, The Eye 2. Then they produced their first film called Standing Animal Story, which, from what I could gather, is just footage of animals standing on their hind legs.
Fair enough.
Then they did The Eye 3, The Descent. They produced a Japanese horror film called Death Water, which sounds really cool. They distributed Apartment. They distributed The World Sinks Except Japan. And then their final film would be Monster X Strikes Back, Attack the G8 Summit. Following that, in 2010, Tornado Films would go bankrupt with a debt of 300 million yen or 3.1 billion USD at the time.
Ouch.
Yeah. However, wow. That's where his film story kind of ends. But the rest of his story begins to end in 2022 when he was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer. At the first annual Tokyo International Shuntaro Kanoi Film Festival in December of 2023, he revealed it was at stage 4 and he only had 6 months to live. As of this recording, Kanoi passed away about a month ago, February 16th, 2024, at age 56.
Wow. Wow, that's young.
To commemorate his death, he wrote a book called End Roll, Shuntaro Kanoi, Terminal Cancer and 15 Cultural Figures, Life Expectancy of 6 Months Theory. It's set to be released October 30th, 2024. I really ended on a damper there. I'm sorry.
Nah, you're good, man. Damn, that's sad, though. That's a pretty young age to die. I guess on a lighter note, no real good way to transition this, but do you want to get into the film itself?
We could. Real quick, another thing. It appears that filming was done in 7 days, roughly.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's how long it was in the documentary, yeah.
So that's the last thing I really had. I went down that rabbit hole. That sounds
pretty standard for, like, Kawasaki films, because aren't most of them about 8-ish days, 7 to 8 days?
I actually noticed that. It seems like a lot of his films are filmed within about a week or two.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I respect his efficiency. And, I mean, from what they showed in the making of footage, it looked like everyone was having a very good time.
Yeah, everybody seemed like they were enjoying themselves and having a good time with this film. But I would say, yes, we can go ahead and transition here. I feel like I partially blame the fact that I don't really feel like talking. But I feel like we're just blowing like through this episode so quickly.
Yeah, I mean, it's just largely an issue of this. Just not a lot of information on the pre-production of this film, unfortunately.
And it's kind of weird, at least because, you know, The Rug Cop, we had a lot to talk about with The Rug Cop.
Yeah, there was a bit to talk about with The Rug Cop. There was a fair bit with some of the other films, like Kaiju Mono as well. I remember having a decent amount. So it's just weird that, like, I was struggling to write anything down from, like, the interviews I could find. Like the only other thing I really have like noted down in front of me is like that, like, you know, everything that happens in Kawasaki's movies is always scripted 100% because, like, you know, doesn't really have the budget to film anything more than what they need. And then, like, I guess a philosophy he had with this film that actually explains a lot about this film is that, quote, I was thinking about how to betray people's expectations as I was working on the script. I try to break common senses of filmmaking. Which reading that quote made, suddenly the film made a lot more sense to me.
Interesting. See, for me, it always seemed like the film made pretty good sense. I read a couple of reviews, too, where people were like, this film's very nonsensical. So I'm curious to talk about that with you, because it sounds like you have a different opinion than I do.
Yeah. For me, I guess I'll get into this a little later. Yeah, starting off the film, we're immediately thrown into a title card and a song.
Yeah, and the opening is a very colorful, very happy opening. Kind of dreamlike, almost.
Yeah, which... and it opens like a kid's film, honestly. Which, I mean, from what I understand, that the whole, like, sing-along thing that's in both this film and Rug Cop is inspired by Dagora vs. Goliath.
Really?
Yeah, because I believe Kawasaki mentioned how, like, when that film came out, like in the actual cinemas, they'd have all the kids were singing along because they'd have the lyrics to the songs in that movie, like on screen, like they do in this film and the Rug Cop, whenever it breaks into song.
Interesting. I had no idea.
Yeah, but yeah, in spite of all how happy-go-lucky this seemingly is, the actual contents of the song, like the actual lyrics. There's a massive juxtaposition between, you know, our titular koala character being very happy, nice guy, and then he's also being demoted, going through a divorce, and all that kind of stuff. And then on top of that, we get a little Ultraman reference as well.
In the song?
Yeah. Well, in the, like, the visuals of the opening credits.
Oh, I might have missed that.
It's literally like the Ultraman rise. Like, he's in the pose, and then it just, like, gets bigger and bigger.
Oh, I did miss that.
Yeah. I feel like it was the most obvious reference.
Well, one thing that is obvious is that Kawasaki always draws inspiration from Ultraman.
Yeah, and just kaiju in general. I mean, I'm pretty sure Hedorah's Roar appears in this film a couple times.
It does, which I'll talk about that. I did write that.
But yeah, the film begins and we're introduced to a group of female office workers just gossiping about one of their co-workers, their boss, whom has an ex-wife, and they're discussing rumors about whatever happened to her. And they keep making mention of the fact that the boss is a very furry guy. And this is when we're introduced to our titular character, the executive koala, who, as the title suggests, is a koala man in a business suit.
Which I would imagine that some people who haven't watched, like, the Calamari Wrestler, I bet it was a little bit of a, like, what's going on here kind of reaction. But I also think for people who have watched, like, the Calamari Wrestler, which this film and that film both carry similar concepts on how they use those characters. Like, they're perfectly normal in society.
Yeah, I was about to say, no one outside of one scene, no one really cares.
Yeah.
That there's just a koala man. I mean, there's a scene later in like the middle of the movie where the executive koala is in like a hostess club with a Korean man that he's trying to organize a business deal with, and all the ladies are more infatuated with the Korean guy just because he's a real Korean. Whoa, more than they are the literal koala man.
But what there is one funny thing is, like, you know, they didn't have the budget to, like, close off certain streets in Tokyo. So they're, like, filming with actual people doing
their
thing,
right?
Oh, yeah,
and
it's
just, and like, there's one shot of him walking through the crowd. And, like, he walks past this one lady who like tries to get out of the way, and then she just stares at him.
Yes, yes, and I'm pretty sure that's I think that's on one of those popular streets in Shibuya.
Probably, yeah.
And I was like, oh, that's so cool. We're like, most of the people aren't actually caring, but like the few people that are like in close proximity do stop and they're like, what? Huh?
Because like he kind of cuts her off.
Yes, he does. He does.
So she's just like, she just stops and then just stares at him. It's great.
It's. But like you said, there is one scripted moment in the film where they're like, a koala? And that's after he exits the store.
Yeah. But going back to the beginning of the movie, you know, we're introduced to the koala. He's proposing like a business idea for the company he works for, which is the Rabos Pickling Company. Where he's suggesting like collaborating with a South Korean company over kimchi.
Which I think it's really interesting that he picked a South Korean company. Because of the rocky relationship between South Korea and Japan, I always find it interesting when they do bring those two together and it's in a very good relationship. Granted, I guess at the end of the film, the South Korean guy does become a villain. Spoilers alert. So, at the end of the day, it kind of makes sense. And it kind of just falls in line with what
I don't think this film and making sense are two words that entirely fit together.
See, I disagree. I think the film makes perfect sense. It's just a weird way of doing it.
I don't think perfect sense in this film quite work together, but sure, whatever.
Well, as we continue, you need to explain to me what doesn't make sense and I'll tell you how it makes sense.
But yeah, he has a long day at work today and you know he stays till late because you know he's one of the higher ups, not quite the boss of the company, but he is one of the higher ups.
From what I can gather, he's not the boss, but he's the assistant.
Yeah, manager. More or less, something like that.
And then above him is the actual boss, and then above him is the CEO.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, after a long day's work, he meets up with Yoko,
who is
his current girlfriend.
But first, when he gets the phone text message, he grabs his phone. And on his phone is the calamari wrestler.
Yeah.
I loved that. Doesn't that happen in Rug Cop 2?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was the calamari wrestler in Rug Cop as well. Yeah.
But wasn't it the same kind of visual gag where it was on a phone?
Something like that.
I want to say it was probably, on the daughter.
They were probably using the exact same like prop.
That's what I was thinking, yeah. Same prop. But yes, he gets a text message. It's his girlfriend, Yoko. So they go to her place. And, you know, have we ever considered the thought that Kawasaki may have created furries?
Well, I don't think he created them. But, you know, this does raise a great question. What is his opinion on furries?
Because the koala definitely makes love.
Oh, yeah, he's quite shirtless.
Just like how the calamari wrestler made love. And the squid made love. There's a lot of love making between these animals and humans.
There's a lot of interspecies relationships.
And we're not going to ask any more questions about it.
What is Kawasaki's opinion on zoophilia?
What is your opinion on the rest of this movie?
What is Kawasaki's opinion on bestiality?
What is your opinion on the next scene?
What is your opinion on bestiality? In the following scene, we find out that not only is the koala's business proposal going well, but also he's been called in to meet up with some detectives. Turns out Yoko was murdered last night.
Yes. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but the surprise sound effect they make here and throughout the film is in all of his movies. Like that sound cue of whenever there's a surprise moment.
I don't recall. Didn't stand out to me.
It stood out to me like a sore thumb. I'm 99% sure it's in most of his films.
It probably is. You're probably right. I'm just blanking on it.
But he does get taken into custody, and they do interrogate him for a full day.
Yeah.
Trying to get him to admit to killing his girlfriend, of which he denies it.
Yeah. They don't really get anywhere, but one of the detectives, Detective Ono, is convinced that the koala did it. During this scene, I'm of the opinion that he might be a drop bear.
I was wondering when that statement was going to be brought up.
If you guys don't know what a drop bear is,
I would assume most people don't.
Basically, a drop bear. So in Australia, you all know koalas, right? That's what the Kawasaki claims this creature to be. But given the executive's koala's later reveals of his character, I have strong reason to believe that the koala is actually a drop bear. And a drop bear is basically just it's like a subspecies of koala that are far, far more violent. So pro tip, if you're ever in Australia, watch the trees. Believe me. I've had one close encounter, and my God, was that the most terrifying moment of my life. Yeah, otherwise koalas suck. I don't like them.
You're the only person on the planet that will say that.
I'm exaggerating. They're okay. They're just overrated. Kangaroos are cooler.
I disagree.
Well, you're allowed to be wrong. It's okay.
You're allowed to be inaccurate.
But I'm not. That's the thing.
Koalas are the best marsupial on the planet.
No. Their cousins are literally sadistic murderers.
And what's the problem with that?
Do you want to see a doctor?
Not really. I'd rather go home and go to bed.
But yeah. Anyway, he's left off the hook. He gets left off the hook because, you know, they don't really have much grounds to charge him. But, you know, newspapers do get a hold of this and publish an article of, a mysterious koala man is murdering people. And, you know, they black out his eyes as if there is any other as if there's another koala man.
Well, what if there is?
I mean, there might be, but we don't see any. We only see three animal people in this entire movie.
Or if you want to count the calamari wrestler.
That doesn't count because
he's a toy. Does that mean that he exists in this universe?
Wait, are you trying to suggest that there's a calamari wrestler cinematic universe?
Yes, where the calamari wrestler exists, the rug cop exists, and executive koala exists. Maybe goalkeeper crab and president Tanuki too?
I don't know. I suppose there's nothing preventing them from existing together.
Well, we know that calamari, koala, goalkeeper crab, and tanuki are all in the same series. It would only be the rug cop that suggests otherwise.
So, when are we getting executive koala versus the calamari wrestler? That's my question.
I would rather see them all team up against, like, a super mega kaiju.
Well, given Kawasaki's track record for kaiju movies, I think maybe not.
That's true.
any other villain. Any other villain. I'll take it. But, you know, everyone in his workplace is afraid of him. And then his boss calls him in for a meeting. And everyone's like,
President Rabbit!
Yeah, and everyone's wondering, is he going to get fired? can't stand being in the room with this guy.
And he meets with the boss, and Mr. Rabbit's just fine with him. It's just like, yeah, it happens. You're a victim in this as well, don't forget. And then he's like, oh, by the way, your business proposal, we're going forward with it. So congratulations. I want you to report directly to me on it.
And thus begins his new journey, because after this, doesn't he have to go start the business meeting?
Well, first, he goes to his psychiatrist for some therapy.
I could use that myself.
Damn. Well, clearly. During this, Detective Honor is also tailing him. But while at the psychiatrist, you know, he has some flashbacks to his relationship with his ex, Yukari, where he realizes he has a lot of missing memories that, and, you know, it's, the movie's planting the seeds for some things that'll pay off later, but yeah. After he leaves, the detective goes in to try and get some details from the psychiatrist about Mr. Koala, but the doctor is quick to deny the detective of any access to his medical record,
pleading that it's the patient doctor agreement, right? Is that what he calls it?
Something like that. I don't remember.
Yeah, basically saying that what the doctor knows cannot go out to anyone else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then in the next scene, the koala meets with the Mr. Kim, the Korean man representing the company that is...
It's that, he's the president.
Was he?
Yes, because his last name is the same name as the company.
Oh, I must have completely missed that. My bad.
Now, the second guy who takes photos, is that supposed to be his interpreter? Because this is one weird thing. He's talking Korean.
I mean, you ask if he's the interpreter, but both of them are speaking Korean.
Oh, that's true. But, like, Koala, like, is able to hear, understand, and talk in Japanese back to them like everything's fine.
Mm.
Like, it's a Nick Adams, Akira Takarada moment.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think they really state what the other guy's job actually is.
He just takes pictures.
Them. Yeah. He's quite literally the third wheel. But to add a fourth wheel to this, while Mr. Kim and the koala exploring Japan and just socializing, more or less, whilst taking a picture, a flying squirrel just appears out of Mr. Kim's bag.
Momo, right?
Yes.
Adorable
little Momo.
Which is a giant flying squirrel, yeah, who loves the koala. And then after an interaction with them, they go to the end of the day, which is at a little club.
I mean, they go practicing martial arts first.
Oh, that's true.
Because Mr. Kim is a martial artist. And this is also where we first get our first real hint at the koala's more violent side.
The more drop bear side.
Yes. Where at one point during the training, he just... inexplicably just does a very just really comes at the man, which surprises him.
He has a Nam flashback, and then he leaps forward to attack.
Yeah.
And then after this,
they agree to work together, the deal's made.
At a little club, they're enjoying themselves. They have some pretty women hosting for them. And then Kim asks the koala to tell them to go away so they could talk privately. This is where we find out that coincidentally they were in love with the same woman.
Yes.
And that she had disappeared and that she had apparently sent messages to Kim about how Koala was abusing her, which leads down another path.
Yeah. And he has no idea what Mr. Kim is talking about.
But after this conversation, it ends with them the following day seeing Mr. Kim off with the President Rabbit, Executive Koala, and the other guy as they get into their car and drive off.
And then on one of the following days, as the Koala is just buying food from the convenience store, just some noodles or something, he receives a mysterious note. The psychiatrist knows everything, which leads to him going and meeting up with the psychiatrist again and asking him if he believes that the Koala would ever engage in domestic violence. Which he says no, doesn't think he's the type. But after the Koala leaves, he calls someone.
And the plans are falling apart. Something's afoot. What could that be?
I wonder who he could be calling.
Okay, let's be real here. The rabbit was kind of an out of left field character to pick.
Oh, there's also a frog guy at the convenience store as well.
Yes, frog clerk that makes hetero sounds.
I love that guy, even though he's just there. I love him. Following this, we cut back to our detective, Mr. Ono, who's trying to investigate the background of the Koala. So he goes to a village, he goes to Sydney Village.
Oh.
Yeah.
How convenient of that name.
Yeah, there's a fair few puns in this movie. Like, they make the Koala Bear, like, tell some people to please bear with me.
Yes, I caught that one a couple times. I thought that was pretty funny.
I thought it was dumb, but whatever. I was like, whatever. Of course. May as well exploit the premise, I suppose. But yeah, everyone in the village that he meets is seemingly afraid of this Koala in the photos that he shows to them. Meanwhile, he visits the convenience store again, where we get a cameo from an actress named Shoko Nakagawa, whom I'm not particularly familiar with, but from looking her up, it appears she was in like Fast and Furious, one of the Fast and Furious movies, which is neat.
Was it Tokyo Drift?
Yeah. I would assume she's probably like some sort of like idol girl. I
would imagine, yes.
Yeah, she's a singer. But yeah, after returning home, he finds in his groceries a note. You murdered Yukari. And then suddenly from behind him, Yukari appears in like a sort of flashback, sort of not, of his murder of her.
Yeah, which this whole scene is admittedly visually different because the lighting has become intense. It's got a cooler color palette. It's darker. It looks different, right?
Yeah.
So at first it's kind of jarring because of the visual difference. But as the time goes on and things start to explain themselves in these sequences, it starts to make sense again.
Hmm. And then he goes to visit the psychiatrist, and then seemingly kills him, as well as then visiting one of his co-workers, and in a very slasher movie-esque sequence, kills her. While she's in a bathrobe, of course.
Right. This whole thing is very slasher-esque.
Well, it's a bit of a mix of like a ghost movie and a slasher. He's like appearing and disappearing like a ghost, but then he's also, you know, an axe-wielding murderer in these sequences.
Maybe like a Michael Myers or something like that?
I mean, I'm pretty sure there's one point in like the sequence where it tributes Psycho and like the camera work.
Yes.
Except it's a lot, if I'm being honest, the camera work's a lot more flat.
But we do get kind of a surprise switch here where...
A weird meta moment where it's just Minoru Kawasaki and the crew filming this scene.
Yes, I love the Kawasaki cameo in this whole thing's like, what? What are we watching?
And then he just wakes up.
And then, yeah, the twist continues with this has all been a dream. None of it's real.
And then he goes back to visit his psychiatrist. Where his rabbit boss is here with. Dun dun dun.
And this is where we get a exposition dump where we find out that he was actually the CEO of the pickle company. He was doing a great job, but when he would go home, he would abuse his wife, and eventually that led to her death. which then he asked the rabbit to destroy all of the evidence, and then he would get psychiatric help for him to forget everything, and then he would step down
through hypnosis.
Yes, which is a lot like pyrokinesis, or not pyrokinesis, the hypnotist. It's a 1998 Japanese horror film that kind of does a similar thing.
Huh, haven't seen it.
And then from there, we get an exposition on how he was actually a really good boss. He just sucked at his home life, and that because of all the stuff that went down, they wanted to preserve the company and his image, so they put him at a lower role.
I mean, that's ordered them to do.
Yeah. And then he gets drugged so they can hypnotize him further to forget everything. They also explain that all the good memories are just that. They're like fake memories that don't actually exist.
I will say this is probably my favorite little moment of cinematography. I just like the shot of after they've like injected him. It's like a handheld close-up shot that constantly like goes like between like showing all three of them and then to just like showing the koala and the rabbit or the koala and the psychiatrist. I think that's a fun shot and probably my favorite in the film, which
see, up what's...
to this point I feel like has been kind of a... It's mostly fine. Some scenes are very flatly shot.
See, it's funny you say that because the following scene right after this,
yeah,
is my favorite sequence in the movie.
The whole musical bit.
So it's a whole trial on the koala and whether or not he's guilty or not. And it reminds me a lot of Pink Floyd's The Wall, The Trial. That whole section of both the movie and the album.
Mm-hmm.
And I just love how it looks different from everything else. And I mean, like that.
I'll give it this. It certainly did recapture my attention.
But after this, he wakes up to the detective there and he's like, I killed them. I killed them.
Yeah. For context, the psychiatrist and the rabbit are now dead on the floor.
And then he goes to jail.
Yeah. He's sent to Alcatraz.
And then while he's in jail, which this is at, so I should also say this, from like the 30-minute mark or 40 minutes in till about an hour and 10 minutes in, which is right after the jail sequence, it feels like the movie's almost at a complete and total stop.
I mean, I felt like the movie was like getting close to like the, like I felt the movie was getting pretty close to the mid, near like the end of the second act at around like the 30-ish minute mark or something like that. And then I looked and I'm like, oh, there's still like more than half of this movie left. Oh.
Yeah. The film kind of lacks in propelling its plot forward.
I mean, the thing is, like, with this film, it feels like it's just a bunch of different ideas that Kawasaki had, and then he just wrote a script around these ideas to fit them all together.
Isn't that what he does?
Rather than one cohesive narrative. Which I think so, because it's like...
Because you said that last episode, did you not?
Yeah, I said last time that, like, in an interview, he mentioned how, like, he'll go out drinking with people, and then he'll come up with and write down a bunch of, like, ideas, and then he'll like use them on his films even though he thinks they're stupid. So that probably is what happened, which makes sense because this film is just completely all over the place.
it's I will say this, the film struggles to figure out what it wants to be. Does it want to be a horror movie? Does it want to be a psychological thriller? Does it want to be a comedy?
I mean, it clearly wants to be a comedy, but it's...
Oh yeah. But it does have other things, like, it's trying to be a horror, it's trying to be a thriller, it's trying to be a martial arts action movie, it's trying to be a romance. There's a lot of different things it's trying to be.
Right.
And all of those things end up being half-cooked. Like, the horror elements are chopped up to dream sequences. The romance is chopped up to the last 5 minutes of the movie.
Mm.
The thriller aspect is chopped up to about 5 minutes in the middle of the film. So it's like, okay, I feel like I just watched 5 different movies in an hour and 20 minutes. And none of them ended the way I wanted it to. Like, I don't know, this film doesn't seem as smart as some of his other films.
Yeah, it just felt all over the place for me, and that's...
And it kind of feels like it's a recycled Calamari Wrestler.
Yeah, it definitely reminded me of Calamari Wrestler in some areas, but it just, frankly, wasn't as entertaining.
Yes. Because, like, that film, admittedly, that film also has the problem of, like, about halfway through the film, it kind of stops for about 20 minutes, and then it starts back up again. Mostly when the third character, the third absurd animal appears, which, I mean, admittedly, that character is still a lot of fun. But, like, there's a 10-minute sequence there that just doesn't feel like it's needed. That's the same for this film, except it's longer. It's extended. It's like 25, 30 minutes of the runtime feels like it could be cut out.
Yeah.
You could cut the psychiatrist and the coworker getting killed. You could cut the whole, like, first or... The whole, like, second interaction with the psychiatrist in general could be cut. Because that's just rehashing the first one.
Even having, like, the detective meet with the psychiatrist.
Yeah, the detective is kind of pointless, to be honest. Like, after the initial, like, run-in, like, he's just not there enough. You could cut his character out entirely.
I mean, I guess you do kind of need him to send the koala to prison, but... Yeah.
You could just have that be any, like, that doesn't have to be him. Or just do what they did in the Rug Cop and have the higher-ups just appear randomly. But, like, they could do that. And that's not even the rest of the film yet. And I think I've already listed off at least 15 minutes of footage you can cut.
Yeah, and then we get a whole nother dream sequence in the prison as well.
Yes.
Where he tries to break out of the prison. I mean, it's kind of a fun sequence, you know, we've got, like, with, like, him, like, throwing around, like, the rag doll of that police officer. Like, that stuff's a bit fun.
Right, no, so, I guess we should jump to this real quick and explain up to that point and then go there. So, in jail, he's kind of treated, like...
He's bullied.
And then he has dreams about, like, beating up... all of the people. And then he has a dream of, like, escaping and getting out of there and, like, actually, like, messing up everybody. Like, he's throwing them around. He's bashing them into walls. It's like, whoa. And then it's just another dream.
Yeah, by this point, I was just tired of all the dream scenes.
It's like, this is no longer a, oh, that's funny, or, oh, that's surprising. It's like, it's the Godzilla 2014 thing of, like, oh, here he is! Oh, we're done.
And then we cut to the detective at the Frog's convenience store. And he picks up a magazine and finds a message that's just like, all you have is a confession? You call this an investigation?
And it's implied that it's the Frog.
Yeah, it's it's visually implied that it's the Frog that's been sending all these messages, because all those messages always come after, like, a scene at the convenience store.
Yeah.
And or are usually in, like, a back from the convenience store.
Yeah. But even then, it's like, the Frog's so irrelevant.
The Frog does nothing after this.
He claps. That's what he does after this.
Yeah.
And even in the scenes that he's in, he just kind of is there. He just runs the story.
Which, I mean, I'm fine with it. Like, I'm fine with that just being his role. It's just really weird to imply him as, like, this whole other, like, seemingly tertiary antagonist and then just do nothing with it.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, I guess maybe that's Kawasaki's thing with this movie, of trying to break common sense to betray people's expectations of the script, but I don't think it works.
I don't think so either. I think this film suffers from trying too hard in that aspect.
Yeah, it's trying too hard to subvert expectations. And that just leads to me just being like, what is this? Who is this for?
Right. So eventually he does wake up, and this is after another dream where he remembers that Yukari says, let's meet back at this fair in exactly a year. And it just so happens to be a year later
of him proposing to her.
And it just so happens to be that day.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, how am I supposed to get out of here? When Momo randomly appears and hands him the keys to get out.
I will say, I did find that mildly funny, Momo reappearing.
But after this, but here's the thing, Momo's technically a villain?
Yeah.
Even though she doesn't show up after this?
Well, she does appear on the guy's shoulder later.
Oh, that's right. And then doesn't she disappear after that?
Probably. But yeah, what we're alluding to here is after the koala escapes, he goes to this location that he dreamed about, where he meets with Mr. Kim and Yoko.
Who is not dead, who is Yukari.
Who wants to get revenge on the koala for, you know, abusing her. And I guess Mr. Kim, since he's still in love with her, wants to just get back together with her. Which then makes the actual ending of the movie even more bizarre. But yeah, this was kind of where I was just done with the movie after it's like, oh, Yukari knows self-resuscitation. Oh, this was their whole plan of like getting revenge on the koala. Why was she in a whole like 6 month relationship? I know I really shouldn't be asking. I know I'm taking this movie too seriously. More seriously.
No, ask him. Ask
him. But like, why did she wait 6 months to be in a relationship and then fake her death? What body did the police look at? Is my question.
Yes. That was my big thing, is what body was it? Because they clearly said that they found her body.
Yeah, 33 stab wounds, apparently. The detective was very convinced.
So did they just get another body?
Did she just revive herself after the autopsy?
Did they kill somebody else? Is she actually a murderer?
I mean, well, she is a murderer.
Oh, yeah, I guess. So she probably killed somebody.
I'm just like, by this point, the film had just lost me, and it's just stupidity where I'm like...
So why are we happy at the end when they get back together? Spoiler alert!
I don't know.
And then we find out that the whole reason she's being abused is because her ancestors went to where Rex lives and killed all the koalas.
Well, most of them. About like a... like 10 or 100,000 or something. And then he gains the power of all his ancestors. And
so, Rex, real quick, is that true? Like, what's the lore there?
I mean, koalas are endangered.
So are you telling me that Australians have slaughtered hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of koalas?
I don't know about millions, but yes.
How does that make you feel?
The same way as all endangered animals. Can we try not to kill them, please? I know I'm... Yeah, I feel like I don't need to say this, but... Can we not kill endangered animals? Please?
Let that be the takeaway of this week's episode.
I know I'm really giving earth-shattering opinions here.
But yes, he then claims the thousands of years of koalas into his own body to fight his biggest foes ever. And then we get some techno music.
Yeah, and then he brutally kills Yukari twice.
Yes!
With like, no remorse.
Oh my god. Like, bashing her face against a pole. Now, here's a fun fact. During the filming of this sequence, they accidentally broke the koala's nose off. And they had to fix it, because it was, like, clean off. But more importantly, so throughout this whole sequence, there's some interesting lighting choices. A lot of neon lighting. But the way that the neon lights are shot, it reminds me of some of those, like, otherworldly sequences in the Showa Ultraman stuff. Did you get that vibe, too?
Not specifically Ultraman, but I did definitely think this was visually probably, like, my favorite sequence in the movie.
Yes, like the I love the visuals here. It's
most interesting. The choreography is decent for like a low budget film, and there's some fun, interesting lighting. Plus, the Ferris wheel in the background is pretty nice.
I will say this: this ending definitely feels like it's the most stylized of Kawasaki's films.
Mm-hmm. I mean, in terms of like the actual plot, I was completely done with the movie, but the fight was cool. The fights were cool in this sequence.
And so after she's dead, he goes after Kim, and they tie, and then they're all sleeping together on the ground, and they're not dead, and they wake up in the morning.
After a very long arc shot that goes on for way too long.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, by this point, you could probably have cut a quarter of the fight with Kim.
Yes.
Half the sequence please. In the jail. And probably a quarter of this sequence. So you could probably cut out 35 minutes of this movie.
Yeah, this movie, I really was feeling this movie outstay its welcome.
Yeah.
Like, it, I think the premise is fine for like a 40-minute short, but an 85-minute film, that's not a long runtime, but I really think the film is pushing it a lot.
Right.
Given how little actually happens.
Right, because it really and honestly, at the end of the film, nothing's changed. He's still in the relationship.
I mean, a little's changed. Like, he's found... I mean, I guess technically he'd found her from the very start.
Exactly! Exactly! There's nothing that's new! He's with the same woman. He's at the same job. Well, we don't know if it's at the same job. I guess that's one thing we don't know. His boss is dead. His psychiatrist is dead. Oh, also the detective, like, saved the koala from a gunshot and died. And then he came back alive. So he's still there. Momo's fine. The frog is fine. They're in love. Everything's fine. And just like that, all is forgiven.
The Korean dude got cucked.
None of this... Well, okay, here's the thing. If we take what the psychiatrist and the president did say at face value, he probably, the koala, will become the boss. So he's back to where he was before the film.
And if and given his violent tendencies have started to reappear, he's probably just going to continue the cycle of abuse.
This movie goes nowhere. Like, this is almost as bad as how in The Calamari Wrestler, she ended up sleeping with the two brothers. Like, suddenly that movie becomes a lot weirder when you think about that.
Yeah.
But overall, like, honestly, like, this ending is very aggravating. Like, I appreciate the passion and, like, the seriousness that they took. Like, everybody is, like, acting straight here. Like, they're not really, you know, it's all very, like, legitimate. Mm. But that being said, it does overstay its welcome. And it's hard to get attached to a film that overstays its welcome like this one does.
Right. Yeah, I didn't particularly enjoy this film a lot. But I will say, it does look like genuine. It did. Like, just watching the film, I definitely got the vibe that everyone, like, the entire cast looked like they were enjoying themselves. And then the making of seemingly confirmed that, yeah, pretty much everyone was having a great time, like, working on this film. Which, I mean, for what it's worth, like, that's nice. That's really all you could want But yeah, I just, this film's not for me. I think I wrote down multiple times that I was way too sober for this movie to really enjoy it. Like, I was like, literally one of my notes is literally just need alcohol, need soju.
So with that being said, I feel like I've said pretty much everything I could say.
Yeah. I don't know if I really have much left that I haven't already said on this film. Yeah, I just didn't find it very funny or enjoyable. At least certainly not in comparison to the Rock Cop, but that does lead to a question.
Oh, yeah?
What would you rank this film in terms of our Kawasaki ranking?
So, do we want to do Rug Cop and Koala, or do we just want to do all six of them?
Well, we did the five in the previous episode, so we may as well be consistent and okay. Do all six.
So, do we want to do our least favorite first?
Of course. That's how we always start.
Okay. Well, I feel like we both agree on our least favorite?
I don't remember.
I feel like we do. I have Kaiju Mono.
Oh, I have at number six, Monster Seafood Wars.
Ah.
And then at number I think we're at number five and six are switched around.
Yes, because mine is Monster Seafood Wars, and yours is
Kaiju Mono.
Okay. So, yes, both of ours are swapped around, but we both kind of agree his kaiju films are his worst.
Yeah. I am very curious about one of his other films, about his other kaiju film, though. Very curious.
So, at number four, What do you have?
I have Executive Koala.
I do, too. Now, admittedly, my number four switched mid-episode recording.
Really? What do you have before?
While we were talking, I had a different movie, my next movie, my number three, at number four.
I take it you were talking about the Calamari Wrestler?
Yes.
See, for me at number three, I have The World Sinks Except Japan.
That's right. So, us talking about it, it helped me understand and realize that this movie, I don't think it doesn't make sense. I think it makes perfect sense. I just don't think it goes anywhere. It's a movie about nothing. Maybe forgiving? Because she forgives him for domestic violence.
She forgives him for, like, no reason.
And then he forgives her for killing his ancestors. And the Korean guy forgives him for stealing his girl. And then the detective...
And then he steals her again? From him, and then he's clapping?
It just, I don't know. This movie does not make sense.
Oh, so now you admit it.
Well, now no, it makes sense, no, it but makes it no just sense. Doesn't, it doesn't no go sense. Anywhere.
It's dumb.
So, yes, that's at my number four. My number three is the Calamari Wrestler.
See, for me, that's yours number two. As I already said, I have World Sinks Except Japan for free.
My number two is The Rug Cop, which means your number one is...
Well, it's the film you just mentioned, The Rug Cop.
And mine is The World Sinks Except Japan. So, do you want to elaborate anymore?
I was a tad disappointed in this film. Because, yeah, based on, like, based on... having watched these other films that we've mentioned, like, I was like, Kawasaki's non-kaiju stuff usually tends to be pretty decent stuff. So I was hoping, like, you know, Rug Cop was a genuine pleasant surprise for me. So I was hoping that maybe Koala would be one of his better films. And while, yeah, it is definitely better than all the kaiju films I've seen from him, unfortunately for his non-kaiju work, this just seems to be... This is my least favorite one. And
I agree.
It was yours. So in that regard, it was a bit disappointing in all honesty. Like, I didn't hate it. It just never grabbed me the way that, like, Rug Cop did. Or even Calamari Wrestler, which just even like when Calamari Wrestler was starting to lose my interest, it quite literally socks you in the face with the reveal of like that squigger just jumping the Calamari Wrestler, and that just immediately brings you back into that film.
Yeah.
And like, as ridiculous as like the Rug Cop's like actual plot got,
it had a charm.
It felt like it had at least a somewhat natural progression to a degree.
Yes.
Whereas this, it's just a mess of a bunch of different ideas that have been just put together with a very loose story, just connecting them together.
Yeah, I would agree.
I mean, why do you think there are so many dream sequences?
Yeah. And, you know, this does lead me to wonder what the last 2 weeks are going to bring. You know, we...
I'm very curious about the next film we're covering.
I'll be honest, and this is something I'll relay in that episode.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just going to say this. When I first watched it, I think it was like the movie I hated the most and of all time. Like, Death Kappa ain't got nothing on this movie. Like, I hated the next movie we're covering. So this will be the first time I've watched it in like over a decade.
See, I've never watched it, but I already know what happens in it, because it was the first film of Kawasaki's I was made aware of before I even knew who Kawasaki was. So like, I kind of think, I have a feeling that a lot of the comedy is not really going to land, because I already know a lot of the jokes in it. And then also the fact that some of the jokes are just stuff from his previous movies.
Mm-hmm. See, that's the thing, is like, now I'm going in, A, knowing who Minoru Kawasaki is, and B, having seen a lot of his work before.
Yeah.
You know, so I fully expect that one to not go over well, but I will be happy to admit if I'm wrong if I watch it.
I hope to be surprised.
But before we talk about that, and you know, that's next week's episode. That's for the listeners to find out about next week.
I wonder if they can guess what film this might be. Ooh.
We'll see. But before that, we have to roll the credits, so let me read off the credits of the cast and crew for this film. As director and co-writer, you have Minoru Kawasaki, who worked on The Calamari Wrestler, Kabuto O Beetle, Go Goalkeeper Crab, The World Sinks Except Japan, The Rug Cop, Monster X Strikes Back, Attack the G8 Summit, Earth Defense Widow, Outer Man, Kaiju Mono, Robomon, Monster Seafood Wars, Planet Prince 2021, President Tanuki, Super Legend God Hikosa, Charge, UFO Next Door, Den Ace, the whole franchise. He did a screenplay for an episode of Ultraman Tiga, and book-wise, he worked on the Godzilla comic, Kneel Down on the Tiger Mask, Ultra Balton Star, Why Does Ultraman Shout Schwa, and Ultraman's Back. Masaman Mijita, the screenwriter, worked on Ultraman Company, Ultraman Tiga, The Final Odyssey, The Calamari Wrestler, Goalkeeper Crab, Monster X Strikes Back, Attack the G8 Summit, Death Kappa, Earth Defense Widow, Outer Man, Monster Seafood Wars, Heisei Ultra 7, Ultraman Tiga, Ultraman Dyna, Ultraman Gaia, Busca Busca, Ultra Q Dark Fantasy, Ultraman Neos, and he was an actor in Heisei Ultra 7, Ultraman Dyna, Ultraman Gaia, Busca Busca, Mirai Sentai Time Ranger, Ultraman Cosmos, Ultra Q Dark Fantasy, and Ultraman Tiga The Final Odyssey. Planning was by Shuntaro Kanoi, who worked on The Calamari Wrestler, Stories Scarier Than Ghosts, Kabuto Beetle, The Rug Cop, The World Sinks Except Japan, The Slit-Mouthed Woman from 2005, Monster X Strikes Back, Attack the G8 Summit, True Story Psychic Video, Okamaru-san, Sancha Poltergeist, Teacher, I'm a Slit-Mouthed Woman, Horror Interpretation, Hanasaki or Grandpa, horror interpretation Momotaro. Hiroyuki Yamada, the producer, worked on The Calamari Wrestler, Tsukiban, Ancient Girl Team Dogun 5, and Hell Driver. Masako Ishii, the composer, worked on The Calamari Wrestler, The Rug Cop, Tsukiban, Goalkeeper Crab, The World Sinks Except Japan, Zora Detective, The Biggest Battle Above,
which is a Rug Cop sequel.
Yes. Ancient Girl Dog-chan. Hironobu Nomura, we're getting into our crew now, who played Tetsuji Ono, was in School Ghost Stories, The Most Strange Stories, Holy Night Special Edition, Ghost Stories 2, and Ghost Stories 3, directed by Shutsuke Kaneko, The Girl Who Leapt Through Time, Ultra Q Dark Fantasy, Slit-Mouthed Woman, the TV show, Kamen Rider X-Aid, Kamen Rider Heisei Generations, Dr. Pac-Man vs. X-Aid and Ghost with Legend Rider.
I played that movie.
Slit-Mouthed Woman 2021, and Yuzo, The Biggest Battle in Tokyo. Ellie Rose, who played Yoko Abe in Yukari Tamura, this was her first movie and her only credit. Lee Ho, who played Kim Possum, this is his only credit I could find. Hurricane Ryu, who played the Koala or Tamura, is known for Mika Droid Robokill Underneath Disco Club Layla. He played Godzillasaurus in Godzilla vs. King Ghidorah. Adventure Godzilla Land, I believe, as stock footage from King Ghidorah.
No, he plays Godzilla.
He plays Godzilla?
Yeah, like all the new footage they filmed.
Gotcha. Godzilla vs. Mothra, which he was Batra?
Yes, I believe so. Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Godzilla vs. Mechagodzilla 2, which he was...
Baby Godzilla, I think.
Baby Godzilla?
Pretty sure.
Godzilla vs. Destoroyah, which he was...
Junior? Yeah.
Earth Defense Widow, Danace the Final, Danace Kick, Danace Wedding, Danace Q, Danace Chaos, Eichi Kikuchi, who was in Fight Mighty Jack, Majin Bander, Return of Ultraman, Zone Fighter, Dengen Zaborgar vs. Dinosaur Army Series, Daitai Goggles 5, Mega Beast Investigator Just Beyond, SFX Giant Legend Wine, The Calamari Wrestler, Monster X Strikes Back, Attack the G8 Summit, Karate Robo Zamborgar, Earth Defense Widow, Outer Man, Fantasy Special Effects Monster, Giant Creation, LEDX, Kaiju Mono, Monster Seafood Wars, Planet Prince 2021, and a Planet Prince 2021 television show. Arthur Kuroda, who played Mamoru Nonaka, was in Kamen Rider Ryuki Special, Ghost Story New, Mini Barukoro, Goalkeeper Crab, and The World Sinks Except Japan. And that is your cast and crew. So, with that being said, Rex, I think we're down to one last thing in this recording.
What could that be?
I believe it's time for the shameless most noblest of podcasting traditions.
Whoa. Tell me.
Well, it goes something like this. Hello, I'm Elijah, and I have a kaiju and tokusatsu problem. Joking aside, I am Elijah Thomas. I co-host the podcast Kaiju Conversation, as you all know. But outside of that, I'm also a part of the rotating hosts for Monsters with Attitude. You can check us out on YouTube, where we do monthly live streams talking kaiju entertainment. You can also head over to Facebook and join our Facebook group. It's a great place to talk with like-minded people. I'm also a writer. I've written for GodzillaMovies.com and in Kaiju Ramen Magazine. Currently, I write for Kaiju United. My most recent article is about Kongsploitation films, which I guess now is outdated with the recent announcement of Ape X Mecha Ape, The New World Order, which by the time this episode goes live, it's already out, so you can watch the next Kongsploitation film, which will probably be on par with Godzilla Kong, The New Empire, if you ask me. And my writing has also been featured in the book Giant Bug Cinema, A Monster Kid's Guide from Bear Manor Media, where I wrote about Ghidorah, the three-headed monster. Outside of writing and podcasting, I also served as a consultant on the upcoming Titanic Creations officially licensed Yungurif articulated figure. More info should be out by now. Go to titaniccreations.com, sign up for the emails and or text message alerts for all the news. I can't wait for everybody to get their hands on it. I've also had the privilege to produce bonus features for SRS Cinema's Yuzo, The Biggest Battle in Tokyo Blu-ray, and even acted as an audio commentator for the film. You can order the Blu-ray on srscinema.com, or you can order Liverleaf on Blu-ray at srscinema.com, where I have produced two video essays for that film. I'm also a filmmaker and YouTuber. You can check out my stuff on my YouTube channel, ET13 Productions, where you can see some of my short films and my older YouTube videos, along with an ever-growing playlist that features all of my appearances on YouTube. I do plan on getting some new videos out soon, so definitely check that out. I also appeared in a kaiju movie, a little-known film called Zillafoot from 2021. I made a brief cameo in the film as Skywatcher number 2. It's got a rating of 3.7 out of 10 on IMDb, so if you want to watch more kaiju, you can also buy that Blu-ray on srscinema.com or the DVD from any online major retailer. Or just watch it for free on Tubi with ads, or watch it on Prime. You can also check out my action figure photography on my Instagram at et13_productions and my X account, the artist formerly known as Twitter, thanks Danny, at the same handle. Now, Rex, where can people find you at?
Well, dear listeners, you can find me on YouTube at Rex Zeno, on Twitter at Rex_Xenomorph, and on Instagram, Rex_Zeno. If you want to check out some of my writing, go take a look at the Tokusatsu Network.
And as for the podcast, don't forget to rate us on iTunes. That boosts our ratings and helps us get recommended to more people just like you. If you don't have an Apple device, which I don't blame you, I don't, that's a lie. I'm literally using a MacBook and my voice is dying. Why am I saying this joke again? But you can rate us on Spotify. To stay up to date with all things Kaiju Conversation related, head over to www.kaijuconversation.com to find our new episodes, social media links, news, and updates for the show. That's our first time saying that that's actually a thing outside of the Godzilla Kong episode because of how these are being recorded, but I can't wait for everybody to see that website, so definitely go check that out. You can follow us on Twitter at KAIJU_CONVERS. If you don't have Twitter, you can follow us on Instagram or like us on Facebook. If you're like me before podcasting and you don't have any social media, lucky you, you can email us at kaijuconversation@gmail.com, all lowercase, all one word, you know the drill. And as always, we'll read your reviews on air for everyone to hear. We also have a Teespring store. Eventually, we'll have original artwork on there, but until then, you can sport our awesome logo on a t-shirt or maybe even a coffee mug. If you'd like to chat with us, check out our Discord server full of others that have similar interests to you. Most recently in our General 1 chat, there was a conversation about the most recent Godzilla designs and their thoughts on them. It's a great community full of great people. Don't forget to subscribe to our YouTube channel and hit the bell so you can be notified anytime we upload a video. We sometimes post exclusives to the channel like bloopers for episodes or minisodes talking about news or other subjects. We also have an interview with Mechagodzilla designer Jared Kurchevsky on the channel. I definitely butchered his name, I'm so sorry. And a huge thanks to Rex for editing all of these episodes and all the other content we upload. His links can be found below. Along with Rex, we'd like to give a huge thanks and shout out to Danny DeManna of the Godzilla Novelization Project for his amazing vocals on our theme song. You can support him by following him on Twitter at danzilla93_GNP or visit his website godzillanovelizationproject.com. And a huge thanks to Grattan Conwell from the podcast Giant Monster BS for composing the music for our theme song. You can support him by following the podcast on Twitter at Giant Monster BS or on any podcast platform under the name Giant Monster BS. And with that, we're going to wrap things up here. So thank you guys so much for listening. And as always, please remember, Life's too short to not talk big. Bye, guys.
Bye.
We are set. We are in debt. There's nothing to sweat. Life's too short now, baby. To not talk big now, baby.
Conversation.
His name's Elijah, baby. And also Rex now, baby. We love those kaiju, baby. And you will too now.